So we are starting Perek Eilatreches now in Membei Zemar Aleph. By way of introduction a little bit, I think we all know what the basic concept of Tereifa is, although we'll see right away in the Gemara that it's not really so simple. Usually we think of it as a Tereifa is something that the animal is injured or the animal has some kind of condition or whatever that it's not going to live very long. We actually had a brief discussion of that in the previous parak, how long it might be expected to live, and we're going to have it several times in our parak, including right at the beginning. You actually have two different opinions of, about it, as we'll see in the Gemara, whether among Tanoim already, whether treifa eine chaya, is it that an animal that is treifa is generally not going to live very long? That's not going to fall in the Sikha Solon. Fine where they went though. Okay.
Where did you put out
the new Gemara? Okay, so usually we say so we're gonna have already at the beginning of the Gemara two opinions. Is it treifa enichaya, that a treifa is not going to live for more than 12 months? For 12 months or more, or is it that treifa chaya, that an animal that is a treifa could actually live much longer than that? You have actually the Ramban asked the question. I mean, how could there be a machlokas on that? You check it out. Either an animal that's treifa does live 12 months or it doesn't. What's the machlokas? So he says because you could have, for example, that in general they don't live 12 months, but you could have some Tanoim had the Kabbalah from their Rebbeim, or based on their own analysis of the situation, that not necessarily is it an absolute thing that it must die within 12 months. In general, they do, but that could be because of other factors.
So
therefore, according to that, then a Treifa would basically be, so even within that, even according to the opinions that a Treifa will live longer than 12 months, you still have that its health will continue to deteriorate. It's not going to live for many, many years more. It's still, it is going to be gradually getting weaker. But basically, according to the opinion Treifa Chaya, what is a Treifa and what isn't, ultimately is a matter of halacha l'moshe m'sinai. So like a bad eye. Oh, so that's a mum, that's something else. You're thinking of, a split eyelid or a split lip or whatever, that's a mum, that's not a treifa, that's a whole different thing. A mum doesn't passel it for us to shecht and eat, which is the subject of our mesechta, that passels it for a korban in the bit mikdash, which is the subject of the rest of seder kodshim. A little more about that, just to get into before we start getting into the details. So now you actually have, whether it, even in those times, a treifa would habitually live longer than 12 months or not. The halacha, by the way, is like the opinion that treifa ain't a chaya. So in principle, actually, it's brought in Shulchan Aruch that when you have an animal that is a suffix treifa, you can see if it survives for 12 months, then you can accept it's kosher. Although it also brings in Shulchan Aruch, that Amar brings, the Nois HaKalim bring, that's not so simple, because once in a very, very great while, you could have an exception. I mean, you could have, ordinarily, most animals with such and such a condition will die within 12 months, but you could have one out of a million that wouldn't, so maybe it's not an absolute thing.
Can that be confirmed once it's geshacht and they open up the inside and see?
Okay, so that depends, actually. So you have a lot of different cases of tzeikis, which we're going to go through in our perek. Some of them, the suffix is already in the Gemara. Some of them, you have a suffix in Rishonim, how to explain the Gemara or whatever. In principle, in a lot of cases, you can. You can check the inside of the animal and see whether there's evidence of a certain injury or a certain whatever. In almost every place where you talk about a suffix, though, that Allah will usually mention in Shulchan Aruch, that we're not bucky in checking for these kinds of fine details, and therefore we have to be master of fit in the suffix. Sometimes we'll allow it in a case of Hefz and Merubah, usually not, but yes.
But one second. Yeah. Are we talking about, the Mishnah talks about specific anatomical injuries.
Yes.
Out of those anatomical injuries, is there the concept of treifa or not? Is it about living up to 12 months regardless of the anatomical injuries, or is it specific anatomical injuries out of which there is no treifa?
So you have like this. The Rambam writes, once the Rambam goes through, so we have in our Mishnah, we're going to have 18, and the Gemara we're going to have, as we go through the Perek, we're going to have a bunch more, most of them being subdivisions of ones in our Mishnah. some of them being new things, whatever it is. Anyway, the Rambam summarizes them at 70 altogether. Once you break them up into finer details, then the Rambam comes up with a list of 70. And he says you can't add or subtract to them. If you have any situation where veterinarians nowadays will say an animal is going to die from it, but it's not on the list, doesn't matter. It's not tzedekah. It's a mesukenness at worst. And the other way around, if they say about any of these ones that we're going to see throughout our perek that they are curable, we say we don't concern ourselves with what they say anyway. It says it's tzedekah, therefore it's tzedekah. We ignore what modern medicine says about it. And you have actually there's an explanation that the Chazon Ish brings on this famous thing that he says. That we know the Gemara talks about in various places, in Avodah Zarah, for example, that you have the 6,000 years of the world are divided into Shnei Alafim Tohu, 2,000 years of nothingness, till Avraham Avinu came along and started teaching people about Hashem, 2,000 of Torah, and 2,000 of Yemos HaMashiach, meaning the time during which the world is gradually being prepared for Yemos HaMashiach. So the question is, what do you mean only 2,000 years of Torah? So that means what happens at the end of 4,000 years since creation? We're still learning Torah after that. So the Chazon Ish actually has a vort on that related to the Rambam. He says the idea is that the Chachamim determined based on up until, the point is, from the year 2000 till the year 4,000 since creation, that's the time during which the parameters of Dinim and the Torah, such as Tzreifos, are determined. If you have after that, for example, that Mishtanu Akevim, we know many times throughout the Gemara that peoples and animals and whatever nature has changed, doesn't matter. These things were fatal injuries in the time during up to the year 4,000. Therefore, they're considered treifus now, even if most animals actually survive such a thing, and vice versa. Let's say, or after that time, they may have come up with treatments for them or whatever. Doesn't matter. And that's the way he says it. With all that said, the Tavor Shor, one of the early Achronim, does say that if you have something outside of the list that we're going to have over here, where we know for a fact that there is a certain kind of injury or something, where we know for a fact that the animal is going to die from it, then yes, he says it can be added to the list of Tereis. It's a little bit different than the Rambam says. So it's an opinion of Achronim. So he actually mentions it in connection with, one of the things we're going to have in our perek is a case where the animal's lower jaw is missing. So you can have the lower jaw is missing. You can still manage to feed the animal with a tube or something. So that in and of itself doesn't make the animal chafe. But the Rambam writes that if the upper jaw is missing, then the animal is chafe. So the Chachmei Lunel, the Chachamim of Lunel in southern France, asked the Rambam about that. Where are you getting that from? And the Rambam says, essentially, that he got it from his knowledge of medicine, because he says the way it works is the upper jaw of an animal is there in order to warm the air before it gets into the windpipe and then down into the lungs. No upper jaw, you have cold air coming in there, therefore it's going to kill the animal. So the Rambam's way of looking at it would be, it's not adding to the tzedekah, it's since the Mishnah and the Gemara mentioned that if the lower jaw is missing, the implication is if the upper jaw is missing, it's tzedekah. Based on the Tavor Shor's logic, though, you could say it is actually something added. We don't actually find it anywhere in the Gemara. But the Rambam knew for a fact that sort of thing will kill the animal, and therefore he was able to add it. So two different ways of looking at the
just an observation
basically. But I don't know if this idea of the Tavor Shor has any particular nakamim as far as halacha. I guess as we go through the parak, we'll see. Okay, I mean, so with all that said, you know, it's worth pointing out there are going to be various things over here. We're going to be using a lot of medical terminology, although I'll try to also translate it for the non-medical people among us, which is everybody except you, pretty much. So I'll do what I can. But yeah, as we go through, we're going to see different things that you're going to say to yourself, wait a minute, modern medicine says this is easily curable. And you have to keep these ideas in mind that just because modern medicine says it is doesn't have any implications as far as health changes. So let's start. Mishnah says, Elu tshreifis bebehema. The following conditions are tshreif in an animal. Oh, one more thing I should mention, by the way. You know, in modern medicine, usually when you have, a person or an animal or whatever has a certain sickness, they're more concerned with what's the cause of it. You know, you could have, let's say, I mean, think of not a sort of tshreifis, let's say, but like think, for example, when a person has a rash. You know, in modern terms, you would look like, you know, there could be any of a dozen different viruses or bacteria or what have you that could cause it, and they want to know the specific one. In the Mishnah and in the Gemara, we're not really looking so much at the underlying causes mostly. We're looking at the actual symptom that we see. So the actual symptom that we see could have been caused by any of a dozen different things. We don't really care. As long as that symptom exists, that's the key thing, whether it's tshreifa or not. Okay. So the Elus tshreifa is the behemah. Nekuvas Habesh, if the animal has a hole in its esophagus and food pipe, and we learned previously that even a tiny hole, in fact, Rashi says a general rule, whenever we say in these things Nikav or Nekuvas or whatever, means even a tiny hole is enough to make a trace. So even a small hole in the vesh, or psukas hagaveres, or if the windpipe is cut, well, as we've learned in previous prakim, it has to be more than 50% of the circumference, has to be cut through or missing. Nikav trum shomayach, number three, if the membrane of the brain has a hole in it. And we'll learn in the Gemara there are actually two membranes that we're dealing with. You have a thicker membrane that's right inside the skull, and then you have a thinner one that sticks tightly to the brain. Pass me over the colon illuminated.
How does someone know before shechting that they have?
So you don't. That's the thing. So we're going to learn in the perek actually. With most of these treifas, you don't specifically have to check for them after shechita unless there's reason to suspect that there's something wrong. You have, for example, a particular animal was hit on the head, for example. Then you have to check for treifas in the brain, that sort of thing. But otherwise, you usually don't. The only thing you have to regularly check for are things where you have a majority or at least a major minority of animals in a particular place have this problem. This is why we have to check for the lungs, because you have so many, it's so common for there to be sirchus and occasionally other problems with the lungs, that's a mere tamotzli at least, so you have to check for them. And then in different places, different things you may have. And in one or another place, one or another type of treifa is more prevalent. With chickens nowadays, they regularly check the kishkis and they check the legs, because those are very common to have injuries and problems in them and or infections or whatever. But yeah. So for example, as far as these three that we had so far, there was a hole in the esophagus, a cut windpipe, or a hole in there, or a hole in one of the membranes of the brain. If you find it, then you find it. If not, you don't specifically have to check for it unless you have reason to think that there was a problem. Like, for example, as far as the two simonim we learned in the previous paragraph, you had a case over there of an animal that was dripping, or a bird actually it was, where it was dripping blood from its neck, and so you have to check, that sort of thing. Okay, so the two membranes of the brain, you can see in the picture over here, on the side over here, this is the skull over here. You have, here is the outer membrane. In English, it's called the dura mater. Mm-hmm. And then you have the inner one, which you can see. It's a little harder to see in the picture, but you have over here this side, which is more reddish. You have where this side is clear because the inner membrane has been taken off. So you have over here this outer membrane. It's like plastic wrap that sticks tightly to the brain. In English, they call it, in medicalese, they call it pia mater. So you'll correct my pronunciation. Yeah. Okay. The arachnoid is something else, actually. You have that's in halacha, that's not really considered a separate membrane. You have the dura mater and the pia mater. The arachnoid is just a network of blood vessels. Okay. Anyway, so if you have a hole in one or the other of those membranes, we'll see in the Gemara which one. Number four, nikav alev lebeis chalala. If you have a hole in the heart all the way into the inside of the heart, then that would make it today. Well, there wouldn't even any heart. So actually you have the Rashba, I think, says, so why are we stressing nikav alev lebeis chalala? But all the other ones, we're just saying nikav. We're saying nikav krum shomayach or whatever. Why here with the heart specifically are we mentioning lebeis chalala? So the Rashba, in fact, says, I think the Rashba says, in fact, what you were implying, that yes, the point of it is the heart has many chambers, as we'll see in the Gemara. In modern terminology, it has four, two large and two small chambers. So the idea is, if the hole goes from the outside into any one of those four, then already the animal or the bird is safe. Doesn't matter which one. That's the point of lebeis chalala. Tosfos gets into a discussion of it and mentions another possibility. Maybe what it is the heart is it's a very thick muscular wall. You would think with all the other ones, yeah, if you're going to have a hole, inevitably it's going to be all the way through. But with the heart, it's very possible to have a hole that only goes partway through the thickness of the heart muscle. So you would think maybe that's enough to make it safe. Nope, therefore the Mishnah is stressing it has to go all the way inside to make the animal safe. Has to be through, well, not through and through from one end of the heart to the other, but from the outside into the inside where the blood is. Yeah.
One second. From the outside to the inside, but not from one chamber to another?
If you have from one chamber to another, now that doesn't specifically make a change, no, because, I mean, it'll cause, you know, it'll have trouble with blood circulation or whatever, it'll be anemia, or whatever, no, it'll be, but it won't necessarily die from that, at least not in the short term. So that's that next. Okay. Another explanation also that's one of the portions says, the vote is that, let's say, again, because the heart muscle wall is very thick, you could conceivably have a hole that passes through it, but without going into the inside of the heart. Imagine like you have a needle, let's say, stuck from one part of the outside of the heart through the muscle and out the other part. That also doesn't make it straight. That's why the Mishnah is stressing the base halali. The hole would have to go into one of the chambers of the heart where the blood collects. If it just goes through the wall, that doesn't make it straight. Correct. Okay. Next one, Nishbara Hashedra Vanifsika Khuchala. The next one is if the spinal cord is broken, sorry, if the spine is broken and the spinal cord is cut. Which those are two things. Rashi explains the spine itself is just bones. That doesn't breakages of that don't in and of themselves kill the animal. But the problem is the spinal cord gets cut, and therefore the animal is paralyzed or whatever happens to it.
Yeah, the back.
Well, we're talking about the spine. The spinal cord that runs along the back. So you have here's the spine. So you have here's the spine, and then you have running down it, running through the bones over there. You have the spinal cord runs down. Yeah, well, it's not a vein. No, it's nerves. It's a bundle of nerves that run down through the. This is why you hear people who get injured in car accidents or falling off horses or what have you, and they become paralyzed because the spinal cord gets cut at some point. If it gets cut high enough, in particular, then you have the nerves that control the nerves that control the lungs don't work, and then the animal can't breathe. Yeah, so we'll see in the Gemara the spinal cord getting injured or whatever, it's only a problem up to a certain point in the animal. We'll see in the Gemara how far that extends in animals and birds, whatever. Okay. Next one, nitala kavod v'len shtayer hemenu klum, if the liver is removed and none of it is left. So we'll see in the Gemara, because if there's some of it left in certain places, it'll regenerate. You hear sometimes that people, there was something on the news the other day where a shliach who donated a liver, because the liver can actually regenerate. It'll grow, as long as you have certain parts of it left, then the tissue of it will grow back. But if it's missing, or enough of it is missing, as the saying over here, then yeah. Well, the relevant parts. We'll see in the Gemara what parts exactly. Right, exactly. The person needs a liver in order to live, right? Or an animal in this case, yeah. As far as the heart, by the way, interesting side point. Tosfos mentions in general these organs that we're mentioning over here, that if they have a hole is treif. Generally, the rule is also if the whole organ itself is missing, the animal is also treif for the same reason, because it needs this thing to function. So we're mentioning over here, let's say, we mentioned the membranes around the brain, let's say. We're not going to mention the lungs or whatever. So if if they have a hole, they're today, then the animal's today. If they're missing, it's also today. So what about the heart? So actually, so Tosfos says, yeah, I mean, if the heart would be missing, then the animal would be today. Now, you would think it seems fairly obvious. There was actually a fascinating case about it about 300 years ago, which involved a major machlokus of the Achronim on the subject. There was a girl who had opened a chicken had been shechted. She'd opened it up to kasher or whatever. She's opening it up and then taking out the kishkis or whatever in her kitchen. There's a cat nearby. Afterwards, she can't find the heart. She's fairly certain. She's pretty much 100% certain that all she threw to the cat were the kishkis, not the heart. But she can't find the heart. So what's going on? So she goes to her local rav, and he says, and you see, Tosfos says over here, and it says in Shulchan Aruch, from that, the heart's missing, the thing is straight. Eventually, the case winds up by the Chacham Tzvi. The Chacham Tzvi says, I can't believe anybody would say such a thing. Obviously, I mean, no creature can live without a heart. Obviously, yeah, she didn't realize, and she threw the heart to the cat. What's even the subject? The chicken was living for months or years before it was checked, and perfectly healthy. Obviously, it had a heart. However, then you have Rabbi Yonasan Agashit got involved over there. Rabbi Yonasan, you usually hear of Rabbi Yonasan together with as the Ba'plugta of Rabbi Yaakov Emden, who was the Chacham Tzvi's son. He was a young Talmid Chacham at this time, like less than 20 years old or so. But he got involved and wrote a tshuva. He says that he talked to me. He says the fact of the matter is, if Tosfos is saying over here, and in Shulchan Aruch mentions Nisal Alev, then the thing is treif. He said he talked to some doctors, veterinarians, or whatever. They said conceivably you could have an organ over there, and it was doing the function of the heart. It was pumping blood, but it's misshapen. It doesn't. The reason you don't see it is because you don't recognize it, because it's like deformed or something. Still doesn't mean there's no normal heart. The chicken might well be traced. So it went back and forth among the humming of that period. By the way, one more thing before we continue is this whole machlokes came also came up as an interesting data point when they started doing heart transplants. Tzitz Eliezer, for example, has a tshuva where he brings this whole thing. If you're saying, if in particular, the Chacham Tzvi is saying that medically no creature can live without a heart, well, then that, so does that mean if a person has a heart transplant and they took out their old heart and replaced it with another one, so does that mean they were dead and then they had tchias hamason? Do they need to be mekadosh their wife again, et cetera, et cetera? So an interesting discussion I've got in. Okay, continuing with the Mishnah. Hareya shenikva oshachasra. Another trefa is if the lung has a hole in it or some part of it is missing. We'll see. The ray is the lung, yeah. We'll see in the Gemara what missing means. Basically, what it means is the lung is divided into a bunch of different lobes, a bunch of different sections. The chasra means if one of those is missing, like if the lung is misshapen. So we'll get into that later. Reb Shimon says it's not just enough if the lung has a hole in it. That in and of itself make the animal trade. Only if the hole goes all the way into where the symponus are. The symponus are the branches, bronchi, they're called in medicalese, that through them you have air comes in from the windpipe and goes into the lungs. And there you have the windpipe split. You have one branch to one lung, the other branch to the other lung. And you have, and then within the lung itself, they divide into finer and finer branches. So Reb Shimon says, if the hole goes all the way as far in the lung as where you have those large branches, then it would make the animal chafe, says Reb Shimon. Halach is not like him, which is why, as we know, even a tiny hole in the lung is a problem. Although, again, we'll see in the Gemara a lot of details about it. Okay, next one, Nikva HaKeva. If the keva, which is one of the four stomachs of the animal, has a hole in it. So a kosher animal, as we know, has four stomachs. Here's a diagram of how they here's a diagram. A person has one stomach, and then they have kishkis and large intestine, small intestine, whatever. A kosher animal, a cud chewing animal, has four. You have the keres. You have the keres, the beta, in order, the way the food goes. It goes in through the esophagus to the keres. The keres is the first stomach. No actual digestion really takes place there. What happens is basically, it stores it, but also what you have is meanwhile bacteria feed on it in there. So they start breaking it down because what do they eat? They eat grass. You know, people can't digest grass. Animals in and of themselves can't either, but the bacteria in the first stomach of theirs do the job. They start breaking it down. It winds up in the beta coesis. There, so that from there it goes back up as cud, and the animal chews it several times. If it keeps on going back and forth, it goes back up. That's what malagera is. That the animal chews its cud. So it goes.
I never understood what that
is. Okay, so that's what it is. In other words, basically, once it's been in the keres for a while. So you have bacteria been feeding on it and whatever, that helps start breaking it down and it goes into the beta coesis, but at that point it's still not finely ground up enough yet for the animal to be able to digest it. So to be able to digest whatever's left of it. So therefore it comes in, so it forms the beta coesis, forms it into a cud, which comes back. The beta coesis, by the way, means the house of cups, because we'll see, I'll show you a diagram that the inside of it looks like the inside lining of it looks like a bunch of cups. So it looks like a bunch of cup-shaped indentations. Let's find the picture. What I really need to do afterwards, I guess, is this bookmark what I need where over here. There it is. Tripe is actually the next stomach. Tripe is actually the third stomach usually. Right. Anyway. So in there it gets formed into cud, it regurgitates it, rechews it, and then it goes back and forth between those stomachs a few times until it's finally digested enough that then it can go into the third stomach. Third stomach is called the hemsis, and that one, the hemsis's job basically is to extract extra water from it. And then from there it goes into the fourth stomach, which is like our stomach, it's got digestive juices in or whatever, and finishes up getting broken down in there, and it goes into the intestines and it absorbs what it needs to from there. Okay. That's showing the lungs,
And the stomachs away.
The stomachs will have to find further. The stomachs mostly we're gonna talk about around Daphnum, so that would be the place to look for more diagrams of those. But But here you have a good overview of the four stomachs together.
Okay.
Okay. Anyway, so the point is, so in the Mishnah we're mentioning over here, Nikra Keva, so if the Keva, which is the fourth stomach, has a hole in it, then you have a problem because then food leaks out of it into the inside of the body and sets up infection. Well, no, we're going to see other ones also. Nikra Hamara, we're going to go through a number of them. Nikra Hamara, another one is if the gallbladder has a hole in it. The gallbladder is a little pouch that's attached to the liver. The liver produces something called bile, also called gall, and then the extra of it is stored in that pouch. So if you have a hole in it, then it leaks out into the body and then it causes. We're going to see in the Gemara that if the gallbladder is removed, you have some kinds of animals, deer in particular, don't have a gallbladder to begin with, so they're kosher without it. But the types of animals that have gallbladders, if the gallbladder is removed, then the animal's trefa. Again, that goes back to what we're saying before about that you have things that are curable by modern medicine or whatever, but in halacha, the animal is still trefa. The truth is also, choices does... A person without a gallbladder nowadays can live. An animal, so that's what we're saying, an animal is trefa. We'll see that in the Gemara. We'll get to that in the Gemara later. Right now, we're just mentioning that it has a hole. The things about it being missing, we'll get to later. But, yeah. I should mention, Tosfos also discusses over here the possibility that maybe there are certain differences in some of these trefas between people and animals. Not necessarily everything that we're saying over here is trefa by an animal would kill a person. Okay. Anyway, next one, nikru hadatin, if the intestines have a hole in them, same problem. Well, you have the large and the small. We'll get to those. We'll get to those details. Well, we'll see in the Gemara, actually. Now, now that you mention it, yes, you do have different parts of the intestines. And in particular, what's important in that regard is you have a part of it that sort of winds round and round itself, kind of like a snake. That part, if it has a hole in it, usually is not such a problem because you have fat in between one part and the next. We'll see, and we'll get to it in the Gemara in a few days. That part is effectively seals it up. So therefore, that's less of an issue. So the dakin that we're talking about over here, if they have a hole, that is the problem, is mainly the parts that don't have that fat. You can see a little bit of it over here. There's other diagrams over here that show it better. Okay. Next, hakeres apnimis shenikva. If you have the inner keres, so on the face of it, keres means the first big stomach that we were seeing in the diagram before. We'll see in the Gemara, actually, that there's a couple of other possibilities what this keres apnimis is. We'll get to this in a few days. Shenikva, if there's a hole in it, or shenikra roiv hachitzona, or if most of the outside of it, meaning they're the muscles, and they're the muscles that cover it from the outside, on the side of the animal, are ripped, then the animal is chafed. Rabbi Yehuda says, it depends, there's actually different sizes depending on the size of the animal. Hagdoyla tefach, for a large animal, and large doesn't just mean cow as opposed to sheep or goats. Rashi says it means even among cows themselves, you have larger ones, you have smaller ones. So with a large one, the amount that would have to be ripped to make it shape would be a tefach. Vaktana beruba, a smaller animal, it would be if most of those muscles are ripped. Okay, next, hemsis of beis hakosis shenikva lachos. The hemsis and the beis hakosis, the third and second stomach, if there's a hole from them to the outside. So now we've covered all four of them. We mentioned the keres. Well, we mentioned a keres apnimius, and we'll see in the Gemara what exactly that means. We mentioned the keva, and now we're mentioning the other two. But the point why we're mentioning there's a hole to the outside is because those two, you have a hole that goes from the second stomach to the third. Ultimately, once the animal is chewed, it's cut enough times, then it goes into the third stomach, the hemsis. So you have a passageway between them. So if there ends up being another hole between them, not a big deal. Not a big deal, yeah. But we're talking about if there's a hole from them to the outside, if there's a hole between those two. Right, right.
But if there's a hole
from either one of them to the outside, then you have a problem. Okay, next one, Nuflim and Agag, if the animal fell off a roof or some other high place. So the problem is, Rashi says, as we'll learn later on in the Gemara, the problem is that the fall may have crushed or damaged or whatever some of its internal organs. So even if you shecht it, right, so if you shecht it right away, you still have a problem. It may take time before the symptoms of that crushing become obvious and therefore the animal's today. So we'll see in the Gemara, there's a certain amount of it. If the animal gets up and walks, if you leave it, it survives for 24 hours, whatever, we'll get to
that.
Another one, Nishtabra Roiv Talisea, if most of its ribs are broken, Udrus HaSazev, and another one, and the last one on the list is an animal that was attacked by a wolf. So we'll see eventually, when we get to it in the Gemara, around afternoon Gimel or so, we're gonna, the Gemara has an expression that what happens is that the wolf with its claws gets poison into the animal, and therefore that injures it and eventually will kill it. So what kind of poison? I mean, on face of it, wolves don't have poison in their claws per se. So a very popular explanation is that it means their claws retract. Their claws are like retract the pads. Wolves, I don't know, wolves, whatever, a lot of different kinds of predatory animals, mostly in the cat family, have claws that retract into, they can actually pull them back under the skin. So therefore, bacteria and other such stuff collect in there. So when it claws an animal, then bacteria gets injected in there, and therefore it can cause infections and cause problems or whatever. There is an interesting idea that's brought in this connection from Rabbi Eliyahu Dessler. He writes in one of his Sforim that you have certain halachas. He mentioned this and a couple of other ones where the explanation that the Chachamim give for us why this particular halacha is so doesn't seem to fit with what we know nowadays. Like we don't know that, you know, wolves and other such animals like that don't inject poison per se. Another example he gives is, let's say you have a halacha on Shabbos that you're allowed to kill lice because the Gemara says they're not part of a rover. They don't come from a male and female. They don't come from parents. They come they're spontaneously generated from dirt or sweat or whatever. So like in modern in modern scientific thing, there's no such thing. That particular one, there's a sikha where the Rebbe, or a letter where the Rebbe writes that, okay, just because science has never seen the thing doesn't mean it can't happen. But anyway, Rav Dessler takes a different view. Fine, let's say the scientists are correct. Lice are not spontaneously generated. The din is still a din. The Chachamim had the Kabbalah that this is a din. They explained it in terms that would be understood in their time. Nowadays, we would explain it in some other terms. So the din is, for example, that you can kill lice on Shabbos, or relevant to our case over here, that an animal that's clawed by a predator, like a wolf or whatever, is traced because of poison, or it's traced. Is it because of poison? In modern terms, you wouldn't necessarily say because of poison, but the din still remains a din, whether we understand it in modern terms the way the Gemara says it or not. Okay.
Well, we're saying a wolf here, though, right? Right.
So I mentioned it's generally animals in the cat family that have retractable claws. Yeah, wolves don't per se, but nevertheless, you still have under their nails, under their claws, there can easily be bacteria and remains of previous victims. And who knows what?
Mosquitoes on Shabbos or not?
Mosquitoes are something else. Mosquitoes are part of a rabble. They are part of a rabble. They definitely hatch from eggs.
With just lice?
Just lice, I think. As far as I know, the only exception is lice. Yeah.
Cockroaches?
No. Definitely not. Okay, let's go on. Rabbi Yehuda says there's details in that also. It's not so simple that it's just we're talking about the animal was clawed by a wolf. If it's a small animal, if it's a small type of animal, a sheep or a goat, then the type of animal that could make it drusa. By the way, drusa is the only one that's mentioned explicitly in the Torah. Bosa basara trefa means an animal that was clawed by a wild animal out in the field. Anyway. So Rabbi Yehuda says, "Drusat hazeev v'daka." If it's a small kind of animal, a sheep or a goat, then a wolf is enough to cause drusa for it. Or drusat ari v'gasa. But if it's a large animal, like a cow, then a zeev is not enough because if a wolf attacks it, nothing happens as far as treifa, because the poison or bacteria or whatever is not enough to have enough of an effect on it. So bites it, we'll see in the Gemara. Or drusat ari v'gasa. It's only if a lion attacks a large animal like that, like a cow, would it make a shake? And Rabbi Yehuda continues, drusat ha-netzba oif hadak, when it comes to a small type of bird, like a pigeon or something, then the type of predatory bird that would make a shake would be a net, which is a hawk, or drusat ha-gas, or ha-gaz, different gears over here, but oif hagas. And then when it comes to a larger animal, like, for example, Rashi says, when it comes to a larger kosher bird, like geese or chickens, then it would have to be a larger kind of, bird, a gas, which Rashi translates with a word that means basically a large hawk.
Gas
is a type of large, that's the point is, in other words, if a small bird, like a pigeon, is attacked by a hawk, that's enough to make it trace, says Rabbi Yehuda. But if, for example, a chicken were attacked by a hawk, Rabbi Yehuda says nothing happens. The bird's not trace. The chicken's not trace. For a chicken to become trace, or a goose to become trace, it would have to be attacked by a larger hawk. So the larger the kosher animal, the larger the type of predator that has to attack it. Same thing as he's saying as far as the animal, that a smaller a sheep or a goat, a wolf attacking it is enough to make it chafe. Whereas a cow, you would need to make it chafe, you would need a larger predator. You'd need a lion to make it chafe. That's what everybody's saying. Okay.
What about a snake?
A snake is a different thing. We're going to have later on in the parrot that if a snake bites an animal, it's technically not... That is actual poison. It technically doesn't make it chafe. However, it's also because of sakonas nefashis, because you could end up eating the poison. So we'll see. We'll get to that later on in the news. That's true. Yeah. But the difference is, I mean, it seems that with the way the Gemara is saying it over here, when we start talking about this matter of Jerusa, is the type of poison that we're talking about that comes from an attacker like a wolf or a lion or what have you, is something that makes the part that was attacked red, which probably means some kind of infection, the fascist. Whereas snake poison doesn't specifically, I mean, it spreads throughout the bloodstream, but there's no particular place in the animal like that you can point to and say this part was affected by it more than it. Zach, while the Mishnah finishes off, this is the general rule, kol she'en kamoya chaya, any condition that a creature that has such a condition wouldn't be able to survive, treifa is treif. That's the basic definition of treifa, although we'll see in the Gemara the details, that if the animal is not going to be able to survive with such a condition. Okay. So the Gemara starts off. Omer b'shim min lakashu, remez l'treifa min atorah minayin. Where is there a remez in the Torah for the concept of treifa? Not a remez, it's an explicit pasuk. Meat that was meat from an animal that was clawed in the field, you can't eat. Now, ela remez l'treifa she'ena chaya min haTorah minayin. Where is there a remez in the Torah for this concept that we said at the end of the Mishnah that if an animal is not going to be able to live with such a condition, that it's treifa, where do we get that from? Maybe after all, I mean, the Torah just mentions or bossa bossa da treifa, maybe it means only an animal that was clawed by that was clawed or attacked or whatever by a wild animal. So where is the remez for that? Bossa bossa da treifa, meat that was torn in the field. So where is remez for treifa shein chayim in atzorim minayim? Where is there a remez in the Torah of this concept that a treifa is not going to live? So let's just give, because you have a pasuk we quoted in the previous parak. Zois hachaya asher techelu. These are the animals that you can eat. Now, chaya usually means a wild animal. But the rules that we're mentioning over there are not only about wild animals. They include domestic animals as well. So therefore, we douse in the word chaya, not meaning wild animal, but meaning alive. It means chaya echel, only an animal that's going to live, you can eat. She'en hachaya lo seichel, an animal that's not going to live, you can't eat. We talked in previous parak, we don't talk about that. We thought to say that Mesukenes is also on those grounds, and we said that not. But this is where we see the more expansive definition of what Treifa is. So Maklal the Treifa Lechoya. So there you go. So we see from that a Treifa is not something that's going to live for very long. Okay, so the question is, Olamando Oma Treifa Chaya. Okay, what about, though, the opinion, which we're going to have various places in our parak and the next parak, that a treifa could live longer than that. That you have later on an opinion that says that maybe a treifa could even live 2 or 3 years. Okay, it'll be health will be deteriorating. Okay, whatever, but it'll live. So then what does he do with this? What does he do with this? Minole. So where does he get the idea that a treifa could be something that could live longer? He says, not doing it. Zoy sachaya, asher tochlu. He would say like this. You'd learn from the same pasuk, but he would learn it differently. The pasuk says this is the chaya that you can eat, meaning zoy sachaya echo chaya acheres lysechel, which means, it means, in other words, that these kinds of animals that are listed over there, you're allowed to eat, implying other ones you're not allowed to eat, the ones that don't have the kosher simonim. These ones that are able to live, you're allowed to eat, meaning regular animals that don't have any of the treifas that we're listing over here. Chaya acheres leseichel, but you have other kinds of animals that could live, and nevertheless you're not allowed to eat them. We call the treifa chaya. So Abirabi says, you see from that, a treifa could live. Otherwise, you don't need to say zoyta chaya. According to the first opinion, what we're saying is zoyta chaya means only the ones that are chaya you can eat, ones that are not chaya you can't eat. The second opinion over here is saying within the chaya itself, the pasuk is implying, you have the type of chaya, the ones that will be able to live long term that you can eat. And then you have the ones that will be able to live long-term, and you can't eat them, namely the ones that have one or another of the traits. OK. So the question is, so he says that's what the Zeus is teaching us. According to the first opinion, you don't need the Zeus. It's just a chaya asher teichlus. So the question is, the ido chai Zeus my obidlay. Okay, so the first opinion, that's a trefa ein chaya, and he says, therefore, that's what it means. Chaya you can eat, she'ein chaya you can't eat. So what is he doing with the word Zeus? The second opinion needs that, because he's saying within chaya itself, you have Zeus that you can eat, and other ones that you can't. What is the first opinion doing with Zeus?
Right.
He says, "Miboyle lechadatana dvei Rabbi Shmuel." He uses it for what we learn in a brayta from the yeshiva of Rabbi Shmuel, the tana dvei Rabbi Shmuel. When it says Zois hachaya asher teichlu, Zois usually you have in the Torah when it says Zois uzeh, meaning something that you can see, marabes boy v'omazeh, something that you point to. Melamed shetofas hakadosh baruch hu mikol min v'min. This teaches us that Hashem held on to every type of animal, the heroloy l'moshe, and showed each type to Moshe. The Amalai, he tells him, Zois Echol, the Zois like it. No, not in the Teva. This is 800 years after the Teva. This is Moshe in his time. He shows Moshe on Har Sinai. He shows him each type of animal. The Amalai, he says to him, Zois Echol, the Zois like Echol. These you can eat, these you can't. So that's a Zois. So in other words, he's saying, you're doing like this. Zois means that Hashem is showing him the types that are kosher and the types that are not. And then Achaya, Asher Teichlu, means only animals that are Achaya, only animals that don't have any particular defect that would prevent them from living, you can eat. The ones that have defects that where they're not going to live very long, because Trefe and Achaya, according to that opinion, then you can't eat them. Okay. So the Idoch Nami Miborilah L'chidatana Devei Rabbi Shmuel. Okay, the second opinion also needs the word Zois to teach us that same concept. He also agrees that Hashem showed Moshe each of the animals, etc. You're right, he needs the word Zeus for that limud. He does not have it available to teach us that there are two different types of chaya. El a trefa chaya menole. So where does he learn then that a trefa is able to live longer than a year? So not going to idach tanad ve'rav ishmol. He learns it from a different braisa of tanad ve'rav ishmol. The tanad ve'rav ishmol, at the end of that same parasha, so you have in this whole thing about kosher and non-kosher animals is in parasha Shmini. At the end of there, at the end of the last pasuk says, you have to be able to distinguish bein hachaya hamechela to bein hachaya asher l'tachol, between the chaya that you can eat and the chaya that you cannot eat. The Tanad Rebbe Shmuel says, what does that distinction mean? It doesn't just mean between the kosher and non-kosher species. It means elu shmoina esre trefas shenem l'moshe mitzina. This refers to the 18 types of trefa that were told as halacha l'moshe mitzina, that Hashem is telling Moshe that therefore you and the Jewish people have to be able to use those 18 to know what you can eat and what you can't. Anything that fits in any of these 18 categories, you can't eat. Anything that doesn't, you can eat. But he's not learning from Zeus, because again, Zeus teaches us that Hashem held each type of animal and showed Moshe what you can eat and what you can't eat. Interesting side point, by the way, on that, the saying that Hashem showed Moshe each type of animal. So the Maharal says a vort on that. What that means is, he says, that it's not Hashem is telling you, you have like this. When we say that, for example, kosher land animals have to chew their cud and they have to split hooves. There's a famous thing that you have on that, you find in a few places in Lechut HaSichos, for example, the Rebbe addresses this. You have an earlier Sfarim, you can find also. Is it that these simonim is because of these simonim the animal is kosher, or is it that these simonim the animal is kosher as a result of having these two simonim, no simonim not kosher, or is it these simonim are meant for us to be able to distinguish what's kosher and what's not kosher, but they don't make the animal kosher? So the Maharal says basically the second way, that the Hashem is showing Moshe each animal. He's showing him basically the reason I don't want you Jewish people to eat this particular animal is because it has this tendency or this and this nature or whatever that would be bad for you, the gashmius and baruchnius and whatever, and therefore, I created it that it has such simonim, so you'll be able to tell that it's not kosher. The Rebbe, on the other hand, in a number of places, Lechut HaSichos talks about that. No, that it seems from based on other considerations that the simonim actually are what make the animal kosher and not. Okay.
So that's
two different ways of looking at it. Okay. Fine. So now, in this last braisa, we mentioned 18 traits. According to Tanur Dvei Rabbi Shmuel, we're saying there are 18 trefas that are mentioned in L'moshe Mitzinai. I mentioned before, by the way, that Amram says 70, but that's because, again, you break down a number of the ones that we're saying over here into finer, kind of like Ovis and Tolis, sort of, yeah. Okay, so the Gemara asks the Tuleka, are you telling me there are no more than 18? There's also Basger the Sinan, Dei Samach Zimul Resh, are key letters from four cases that we have in other Mishnayos or Braises that have to do with Dinim of Treifa. And Shev Shmeitzah, by the way, this is where the name of the famous Lomdish Sefer called Shev Shmeitzah, that's where he got the name of it from. There's seven statements of Amoroim about things that are Treifa that aren't directly related to the ones in our Mishnah. So you have a lot more than 18 then. So Bishleim Latana Didan. Okay, so for the Tana of our Mishnah, it's not such a big deal. Okay, yes, our Tana in our Mishnah mentioned only 18, but still, okay, Tana, he taught whatever specific ones he mentioned. Or the Shaya asked him a Zakwal, and at the end he says Zakwal Kolsha and Chamaya Chayat Shefer. But fine, that includes the other 11. So according to the Tana of our Mishnah, it's not like there's a dastard thing, there must be 18, no more, no less. There could be dozens, but he only bothered listing 18. The main one. Elo l'tana d'rei Rabbi Shmuel, but what about according to Tana d'rei Rabbi Shmuel, d'om yudchas treifus v'tu, yudchas treifus, he says exactly 18, what do you mean, v'tu leka? Don't you have other ones? We have at least 11 other ones we know of. Number one, so Basgar is a Basgar based Samach Gimel Reish. So we're going to go through each one of those. Each one of these, again, is something where we have a Mishnah or a Braita that mentions a particular detail, and it has to do with Hilchos Treifus. The number one, V'orika Behema Shenechtechu Raglea Min HaKubo L'mayla Treifa. If an animal's back legs, In throughout our parak, by the way, we're also at the end of the previous parak, you distinguish with an animal between yadayim and raglayim. You know, an animal stands on 4 feet, but yeah, the two four legs are called yadayim, and the two back ones are called raglayim. So when we have to make a distinction, then yeah. So if an animal's legs are chopped off, min ha'akubo olamayla, from the akuba, from the joint. Raglayim would mean the leg, yeah. Min ha'akubo olamayla, from the joint and anywhere further up. So we're going to see. Actually, we're going to discuss when we discuss this concept in more detail. A kosher animal actually has two joints. Actually has two major joints in its leg that are relevant to us. And it's back leg we're talking about. Yeah. So you have over here. You can see you have a joint over here. You have an animal's leg has three long bones in it. So you have to think of it, basically, an animal, a kosher animal, or an animal with hooves, basically walks on its tiptoes. So you have the three long bones in its leg, like we have in our arm and our leg. We have an upper bone and a lower bone, and then you have the wrist and the hand, and you have the wrist or the ankle and the hand or the foot. For an animal, those correspond to the top two of an animal. The third one, the third bone over here of an animal, corresponds more or less to our hand or the sole of our foot. And then the little bones and things down there correspond to the fingers and the toes. And so it says fingers and the toes and the fingernails. So you have one, two, three. So the part that they're walking on is the foot. No, but it's not really that flat, actually. No. In fact, a kosher animal has split hooves, means it's completely split through. A kosher animal effectively is walking on the tips of two toes. Yeah. That's why.
Hooves, but not the back.
Well, no, the hoof goes all the way around. I mean, what you actually have is many kosher animals have an arrangement sort of like this. You have two hooves that touch the ground, and then you have two little shorter things that are like sort of like shorter fingers, so to speak, that don't quite touch the ground. Dew claws, they call them, whatever.
Has to be
split from the front to the back, right? That's the difference. Later on in our parak, we're going to talk about the simonim of kosher versus non-kosher animals. Camels aren't like that. A camel doesn't quite walk on its tiptoes. A camel walks basically on its fingers like that. So it has hooves, nail-like things in the front, but it's not split all the way to the back. Kosher animals walk on tiptoe, basically. Yeah. So anyway, so a kosher animal has three long bones in its leg. You have one, two, three. Right. So which akubo, which joint are we talking about over here that the leg is cut off above that? It's today, so we'll get to later on. But anyway, the point is you have such a din that if the animal's leg is cut off, min akubo l'mayla tereifa. So again, according to Tanur d'rei Rabbi Shmuel, you have already 18 in our Mishnah. This is not one of them. He says there are dafka 18 that are halacha l'moshe m'Sinai. So where does this one fit in? The answer is okay. Yes, yeah, the answer is okay. Sugal like Rav Shimon ben Elazar. Fine. Tanid Rav Shmuel would hold like Rav Shimon ben Elazar. The Amar, where Rav Shimon ben Elazar says it's not shreis because you chayla he likavus velichias. Because you can cauterize it and the animal will still be able to live. Rav Shimon ben Elazar is saying the reason why the animal is straight in that case can die from loss of blood or infection or what have you. So if you cauterize it, if you burn the wound closed, then the animal can still live. So therefore, it's not a straight. Okay.
So are we saying that straight now, according to Rav Shimon, is when you can heal?
So what's one of the distinctions that the Rishonim talk about is that maybe the definition of a trefa is something that, again, at least in the times of the Gemara, was incurable. If you have, it could be cured, then maybe it doesn't belong in the list of trefa. No, we're not changing the definition. No, I was saying before that, again, even you have nowadays, let's say that something can be cured, it doesn't matter. So in those times, part of the distinction would be, we talked before about Mr. Kenneth, now we're talking about trefa, but part of the distinction would be, Mr. Kenneth would be, it could in principle be healed. There is some kind of medicine or some kind of treatment for it, whereas trefa not. So Rav Shimon Elazar would say this particular case doesn't belong in the list of trefas because it's curable. Okay, the question is, that doesn't count. Therefore, Tanad Rav Shmuel wouldn't count it. The problem with that is, Afa Gavdi Chol Likavus Velichias. Okay, so what if you could cauterize it and the animal would still live? Laman Kamar, after all, which opinion are we trying to work this out according to? L'Tanad Rav Shmuel. Well, Tanad Rav Shmuel Trefa Chayes Virlay. Well, Tanad Rav Shmuel, we said before, holds that a Trefa is able to live long term. So in other words, according to him, so okay, Rav Shimon Elazar says you could cauterize the wound and therefore the animal could live for another 2 or 3 years. So what? According to Tanad Rav Shmuel, the key thing is a Trefa is not determined by how long the animal lives. It's the anatomy, right? So if it's missing an important part of its leg, it should be Trefa according to him regardless. No, it's not going to grow back. You're not going to have a leg in lizards and reptiles and whatever like that. They can grow back missing limbs, but not in mammals. No. Okay. The answer is Ella Savala Kribshim and Allah Zabama Ksherin. Okay, the answer is, it's not, we're going to say that Tanad Rav Shmuel holds like Rav Shimon Elazar, who says, yes, in principle, you might have thought that it could die from it, but since Yochalo Likovitz Velichis, then therefore, if you do that, then it's not Shreifa. No, he holds like Rav Shimon Elazar, who says, it's kosher because you're able to do that. In other words, Rav Shimon Elazar says, I don't consider this to be a Shreifa at all. So therefore, Tanad Rav Shmuel can hold like that. Okay, I mean, yeah, some Rishonim point out, some of the Ramban, for example, points out it's a little hard to understand the Mahalach of the Gemara over here. The Braitha goes, Rav Shimon Elazar Machshir, Mepneshi Hi Cholo Lekavis Velichis, so why was the Gemara, like, ignoring the word Machshir before and asking what Tanad Rav Shmuel holds when it's right there in the Braitha? So therefore, there's other explanations, including maybe we're referring to a different statement of Rav Shimon Elazar. Maybe we weren't referring to this braisa at all, but a statement that Rav Shimon Elazar makes in a different context in halacha. And then we're saying, as far as Shreifas, you should know also he holds that it is kosher and Tanad Rav Shmuel can hold that. We didn't say something from Rav Shimon Elazar before. Yeah. Okay. Fine. So therefore, so that takes care of the bays of Baska. Tanad Rav Shmuel does not have to hold that. Okay. What about the samach? What about you have when bones, when vertebrae of the spine are missing? So in the Mishnah we talked about that you have the spine is broken and therefore if the spine is broken and therefore the spinal cord gets damaged or cut or whatever. But we have just missing vertebrae themselves are enough to make an animal or a person change. It's none. We learn in a Mishnah. So we have a din like this. A whole spine of a person is metame b'maga u'masa and b'oichel. You touch it, you carry it, or you're under the same roof as it, or you overhang it, or whatever, then you become tame. If it's not a whole spine, though, if some pieces are missing, then it's not metame b'oichel. Unless you have a certain amount of bones all together over there, unless you have Roiv Binyan and Roiv Minyan, whatever, anyway. So Kama Chisorin B'Shedra, how much of the Shedra has to be missing in order for it not to be Matame all by itself, oil? B'Shama and Shtei Cholyas, B'Shama says only if you have 2 vertebrae missing, or B'Shama and Cholyachas, and B'Shama says even if only 1 is missing, that's enough to make it, that's not Matame, oil. V'omer Rav Yehuda Amar Shmuel, and Rav Yehuda tells us in the name of Shmuel that now their machloikis is about Tumah, but you should know V'chein L'Treifa. The same din applies as far as Treifa. That according to Beit Shammai, if the animal is missing two vertebrae, would it be Treif? And according to Beit Hillel, even if it's only missing one.
So Beit Shammai is Machia.
So it comes out actually, for one purpose, the Shammai is Mekel, and for the other purpose, it's Machmir. As far as Tumah V'Tara, they're Machmir. As far as Treifas, it comes out, they're Mekel. Yeah, by the way, the Gemara mentions in Erevin, this is an example of that if a person were to, let's say, I'm going to be Mekel like the Tilol as far as Tumah V'Tara, and be Mekel like the Shammai as far as Treifas, he can't do that. He'd be called a Rosh for doing that. And if he's Machmir like both of them, it's also not good. You have to pick one or the other. Anyway, the point is, so there you have, again, it's related, the thing about Treifas itself is not a Mishnah or a Braisa, but it's related to a Mishnah or a Braisa, because we have Kama Chisorin B'Shedra, and the Machlokas, the Shammai B'Tilul itself, about Tumah V'Tara, isn't a Mishnah. Shmuel adds for us that it also applies to Treifas. So again, apparently everybody agrees with that concept that it is Treifas, you don't just have a Machlokas, how much, one or two. So why doesn't Tana Drevi Shmuel list that? And again, it doesn't fit in any of the other categories of our Mishnah. So therefore, you have a problem. Tana Degrei Rabbi Shmuel says that there's Davka 18 Treifas, no more, no less. Our Mishnah listed 18. Missing Cholius of the Shedra are not one of them, so that would be a 19th. The answer is, Hemphis of Beit HaKosis, the Kochashvat, Mahu Batarki, what it is like this. Our Mishnah had mentioned that you have two of the four stomachs, the Hemphis and the Beit HaKosis, the third and the second stomachs. The Mishnah had mentioned them that if they have a hole going to the outside, we assume that those are two separate treifas, one where there's a hole in this one where there's a hole in this one. Instead, combine them together, chashvinu v'chada, count them as one, because okay, I mean, they're all the stomachs are attached, but because those two, they have a very similar function. This one, this one makes the grass into a cud. This one takes out extra water from it. And it's similar enough. They have a direct commitment. So therefore, you count them as one. So now you're missing one. Good. So now you have room for one more. So you put in this one about a missing koya. Okay. What about Vaik Gluda? Okay. What about, though, yet another one? Later in our Mishnah, and later on in our Perek, you have, if an animal's skin is missing, which could be, Rashi mentions over here, we'll learn it later in the Gemara. You could have, for example, if the animal had an infection or an inflammation or something, and therefore the skin peeled off. Or you could have it peeled off because it was overworked or whatever it is. That would rip parts of it. That wouldn't rip all of it off. But no, we're talking about like you have a large part of the skin, of the outer layer of the skin has come off. It is missing, yeah. Yeah. So, one example could be, like, nowadays, for example, it is Treifa, that's the thing. That's what we're asking. So then that should be another Treifa. It's the same kind of thing as, for example, you have, let's say, when you hear a person have third-degree burns over whatever percent of their body, that's what it is. It is the outer layer of skin is missing. So similar idea. And if you have enough of it is missing, the animal is Treifa. The answer is, okay, Tavalok Reb Meir, Demacher. Okay, but Tronad Reb Shmuel can hold like Reb Meir, who says that that's not a Treifa. Okay, what about another one? So again, we're still working through Basgar over here. So we had Beis, which was Behema Shenech Tehuragla. We had Samach, which was Chisorin Beshedra. We had Gimel, which was Gluda. And now we have the Resh. Va'ika Charusa. What about you have another Treifa is where the lung of the animal shrank and dried up. Which we're going to learn later on in the parak, there's two things that could make that happen. Basically, it happens when the animal is frightened. So one possibility is it could be frightened bidei shamayim, because of some natural thing, like a loud thunderclap or something. Or it could be bidei adam, that it was frightened by a person. Let's say, for example, that I'm going to give an example, let's say shechted another animal in front of it. So the din is, we're going to learn later on in the parak, that if it was bidei shamayim, then the animal is kosher, but if it was bidei adam, then it's chafed, because it's not going to recover. So that's another example of a treifa.
Guaranteed,
they're right. The Chamad B'Kabbalah, that's yes. Yeah. Okay, so again, that would be another one. The answer to? That's the question. In other words, again, we're still working out, according to Tana Drei Rabbi Shmuel, you have to have exactly 18 treifas, no more, no less. And here we have a 19. So this is Charusa. The answer is, we're going to have to take out another one from our Mishnah, Mora Man Katonila. Which Tana is it that says, who mentioned in our Mishnah, that if the Mora, if the gallbladder has a hole in it, that's not according to everybody, that's only according to Rabbi Yehuda. Therefore, Tana de Rebbe Shmuel doesn't have to agree with that. Afik Mara v'ayo Charusa. So take out that one, put in Charusa, and you're still at 18. Okay, so far that takes care of Baster, of those four. Now, though, what about, we have the seven that I mentioned by Amiroyim, Va'ika Shev Shmaitza, then we have seven cases that are described by Amiroyim. And by the way, Rashi points out a little later on, you have many things throughout our parak. We're going to have details that Amiroyim are mentioning. But each of those is going to be a detail within one of the basic ones that we mentioned in our Mishnah. We mentioned in our Mishnah, for example, the lung has a hole, and that leads to a lot of details, cases where the lung has discoloration, cases where it has tirchus, and this and that and the other. Here we have these seven are things that don't at all have anything to do with anything in our Mishnah. So what are they? Number one, the Amr of Mas, and we're going to deal with all of them in detail later on in the parak. But so for now, just briefly, number one, the Amr of Masna. Number one is that Rav Masna says, "Hi, Buka de Atma de Shof Miduchte." If the literally Buka means the bottle of the hip was dislocated from its place, then Trefa. So that what that means is that you have like this. Let's find it quickly over here. So you have the upper long bone of the leg fits into a socket in the hip bone. We have the same kind of thing. So if that gets dislocated, and we'll see the details later on in the parak, then it's tricky. So that's one, which we don't have anything about that in our Mishnah.
It won't live,
but that's the idea with traits in general, yeah. So we're going to see in the Gemara that there's a little more detail of that. It has to be dislocated, and the ligaments have to, whatever. Okay, anyway. That's number one. Number two, v'omer rochesh v'papa m'shmei d'rab, loksa b'kulya achas trefa. That second din is if the animal has damage or like an infection or whatever in even one kidney, or all the more so in both, then it's treif. Cool, as a kidney, yeah.
When
you open up the animal, you see if you have an infection or whatever in it. We'll see again later. All these things we're going to deal with in the parak. We're going to deal with each one of them in detail. Yeah. So mind you, by the way, we're going to say later on in the parak if the animal is missing its kidneys, it's kosher, which is very different than a person.
It is kosher.
Yes.
If it's missing one kidney.
If it's missing both, even.
Cannot miss both kidneys.
Yeah, actually, it can. I'll explain soon. I'll explain soon how, but the fact is, la locha it is. You know what? I'll mention it now. Why not? So with a person, we know that wouldn't work. A person is Rahman al-Islam. Their kidneys aren't functioning. They'll be dead within a few days unless they do dialysis. They actually did an experiment in here, in Colon Illuminated. He mentions an experiment that they did in the Netherlands about 30 years ago where they removed both kidneys of an animal, and they found it was still able to function well. Again, because a kosher animal has four stomachs and it has that whole complicated digestive process, it's able to compensate by flushing out the toxins from one of its other stomachs, in particular from the keres, from the first stomach.
They coach them.
So therefore, it can live even without kidneys. But, yeah. But here we're saying if a kidney gets infected and then the infection goes a certain depth into the kidney or whatever, then the animal is tricky.
It's
poison other parts.
It's not consistent. If you're saying that one kidney gets infected on one hand, and you say that if the animal has no kidneys, he's not.
Because that's, as Ellie just said, because if it's infected, then that infection is going to spread to other parts of the body. So the problem isn't the kidney itself being infected per se. The problem is that it's going to affect other parts, right? Okay, that's number two. Number three, utnan nitalat chayok shera. Number three is, later on in our parak, we learn that if the animal is missing the spleen, then it's kosher. However, v'omer avavira mishmei d'rava. Rav Avira says in the name of Rava, loy shanu ela nital. That's true only if the spleen was completely removed. Even nowadays, yet people have their spleen removed for some reason or another, and nothing happens. It does a couple of different things, including it recycles red blood cells and does a couple of other things, but it's not something essential to life. However, Rav Avira Mishmei D'Rava says, Lo Shanu Ela Nital, that's only true if the spleen is completely removed, Avol Nikar Trefa, but if it has a hole in it, then it's Tref, provided the hole has to be in a certain part of it, as we'll learn later on, but whatever, that's another case of Trefus. And what about yet another one, V'omer Rav Baba Chana Amar Shmuel, Simonim Shenidaldulu Beruban Trefa, if the Simonim, the windpipe and the esophagus, are nidaldalu, they're torn away in a number of different places, so like they're attached a little here, a little there. So Rashi explains later on that it means that you have, they're supposed to be attached to the inside, basically within the jaws, like behind, well, not within the jaws or whatever, but like right behind them or whatever, like the back of the throat. They're supposed to be attached there at the top, and therefore if they're torn away from there. And according to Rabbeinu Hanano, what it means is they're also supposed to be attached to each other along their length. And some Dalgulu here means that they're detached from each other in various places, whatever. Yeah. Well, so that's true, in fact, but then it depending where exactly they're dislocated, it might even be they can't check, right? So also Tereka. And another one, if a rib is dislocated from its root, then it's tereka. So we said in our Mishnah that if most of the ribs are broken, it's tereka. But here what we're talking about something else. Each rib is attached to one of the, you have to eat, the vertebrae, the bones of the spine have ribs attached to them. Each one, well, most of them anyway, have two ribs attached to them, one on each side. So if a rib gets dislocated, together with the part of the vertebrae that it's attached to, then the animal is tereka. That's another one.
Because
then the spinal cord is eventually going to get damaged or whatever. Whatever the reason is, exactly, that's the chum, have the kabbalah, that's how it is. So that's another one that should make the animal tereka. And again, according to Tanur Rabbi Shmuel, that you have exactly 18 tereka, no more, no less. So what does he do with that? The Gogolos Shenech Vesabaruba. Also, the Masna Amar Shmuel says if the skull, Gogolos means the skull, was Nechvasa on most of it. There's a few different explanations of what Nechvasa means. Rashi says that it means that it was hit many times. There's no actual hole in it, but if it was banged up, and it's like the animal has a concussion or whatever, basically, then it's straight. You have a few different explanations, including it means it was shattered or it was dented or whatever. Anyway, the point is that none of it is actually missing or broken. None of it is actually missing, but it's broken. Mm-hmm. So that's enough to make the animal straight. If it's beruba, if it's most of it. Also, if the muscles that cover most of the keres are ripped open, then it's tereka. The keres is the first stomach, and the point is also that Rashi explains what it is like this. Here's a picture. So the keres is this large stomach over here. Most of the keres is you have the ribs. This is the last rib over here. Most of the keres is behind the ribs. Part of it is not. Part of it is just behind the muscles of the side of the animals. We say basar achopas roiv akeres over here. What we mean is, in other words, that the part of it that is only covered by muscles and not by ribs. If most of that part is ripped open, then the animal is tereka. So again, that's not one that we mentioned in our Mishnah. So now we have seven more things. So never mind the Tanakama. These are all things mentioned by Amaroi. So again, our Mishnah is not such a problem. He said Zehaklal, so it includes many other things. But Tanad, Rabbi Shmuel, says there are jobs to 18, no more, no less. What are you doing with these seven? The answer is like this. You have eight things in our Mishnah that it mentioned that if they have a hole, then the animal is tereka. We actually have 10, but we said already to subtract two of them, because we took two of them, the hemsis and beis hakoseh, and combined them. We took out the mara, the gallbladder, so we're left with eight. So we don't have to consider them as eight separate things. Chashvinu b'chad, consider it all as one thing. Any particular organ where there's a problem with a hole in it would make it tereka. Then if that thing has a hole, so that's all considered one, let's say. Therefore, Afik Shev, Bail Shev. So you're taking out seven, and so now you have room for another seven. The question is, Ihochi, okay, but if you're going to work like that, Suki Nami Tirei Havu, in that case, you have two things in our Mishnah that we mentioned. If they got cut, then the animal's tereka. One, the windpipe, and one, the spinal cord. By the same logic, count those both as one. Chashvinu Bechad, so count them as one. Batalu Chodeh, you're vital, you have one missing. And also, out of the Shev Shmeister that we mentioned, one of them, the one that Rav Avira Amar Rav mentioned, the one with a hole in the spleen, that's an example of a hole. So if you're going to say that all the ones with holes count as one thing, then you're still going to only have 17 or 16. The answer is Ella, no. Earlier in the discussion, we took out two. We thought to keep out the case where the animal had its legs chopped off, because we said maybe he holds like a criminal altar, and the case where the animal's skin was stripped off, where we said maybe he holds like a mayor. Loy tapuk, don't take those out. Let's say that Tana de Rabbi Shmuel does hold like the Rabbanon. So therefore, we had Rav Shimon Elazar and Rav Meir, respectively, said it's not Chayt. Let's say Tana de Rabbi Shmuel doesn't hold like them. So therefore, yes, if we take out two more, if we said that, number one, we take both Sukkot and count them as one, the windpipe and the spinal cord, and we take out Rav Avira's, because that's another case of Nekuva, and we just say Nekuva in general, that was where the spleen has a hole in it. Then that brings you down to 16. Good. Now you have room for the leg being chopped off and for the skin being stripped off, and you're back to 18. So it comes out in the end that Tana de Rabbi Shmuel is able to have a list of 18, no more, no less. Nevertheless, he has the Kabbalah that there are exactly 18, no more, no less. So you can make that fit with our Mishnah and make that work with the list that the Amoraim gave us, and not say that he has to be arguing. So the list would come out like this. Number one, you have anything where various internal organs have a hole in them. Number two, cases where an organ is cut, namely you have the windpipe and the spinal cord. Number three, which is from our Mishnah, the liver is missing. Number four, where one of the lobes of the lung is missing. Number five, where the keres hachitzayna, the outer keres is torn. Number six, where it fell off the roof. Number seven, where most of its ribs are broken. Number eight, where it was attacked by a wolf or a lion or what have you. Number nine, where the leg was chopped off. Number 10, missing chulius in the shedra. Number 11, skin missing, the skin stripped off. Number 12, the lung being dried up, bidei adam. Number 13, the hip being dislocated. Number 14, an infection in one of the kidneys. Number 15, the simonim, the kana and the vesh, torn out of their place in various places, loosened, whatever. Number 16, a rib being dislocated. Number 17, the skull being shattered or dented or whatever. And number 18, where the basa achoyfes hakeres, the muscles that cover most of the keres, is ripped open. So that would be the 18 according
to... Why is the hip dislocated? Why is it
so? We're going to learn later on in the perek that actually it's not
that's
just...
Live.
So we're going to learn later on in the perek, it's not just if the hip is dislocated, it's also if you have the ligaments that hold that joint together are rotted away. We'll talk about it later on. Okay.